Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of October 30th, 2016. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Good. How are you doing?
Great. Great to have you here, as always, D.R. So, D.R., over the past week to 10 days, there's been some interesting and good news at the sort of regional governmental level in the United States, particularly up here in the Northeast. We'll start out with right here in New England, then we'll go to New York. But up here in New England, as backdrop, for those of you who have been listening or are new to the story, there have been lots of discussions about pipelines that have to go across the New England area to carry in natural gas from the Marcellus Shale down in down in Pennsylvania. And there's been lots of efforts to decrease the emissions, say, underneath the federal plan for the Clean Power Plan and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So two things happened this week that are of note. First of all, the state of Connecticut. Well, D.R., tell me, what happened down in Connecticut that climate hawks ought to know about?
According to Commonwealth Magazine, Connecticut officials have abandoned the process to procure more natural gas, largely because of decisions here in Massachusetts and in New Hampshire that eliminated financing for the project. The Connecticut Department of Energy and Environmental Protection said decisions made by the New Hampshire Public Utilities Commission and the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court have, quote, materially reduced the ability for the costs of projects to be shared among a substantial portion of the region's ratepayers, which is a euphemism for saying that because the citizens of Massachusetts and New Hampshire wouldn't allow themselves to be screwed over by the natural gas company, they essentially have decided to stop the procurement process for the natural gas from one of these pipelines, the Access Northeast pipeline, to be specific.
And so, in the backdrop of the whole thing is that there's been lots of opposition to these pipelines, grassroots opposition, and then last August, I guess it was, the Supreme Judicial Court of Massachusetts ruled that it was illegal for the state to essentially tax ratepayers, electricity ratepayers, to pay for this crazy pipeline, right? So that put the kibosh on the whole thing here in Massachusetts. They did something similar up in New Hampshire, and all of a sudden the guys in Connecticut get cold feet, right? Because they don't want to be paying for the whole pipeline just for them.
Shall we play the sad violin for the promoters of the Access Northeast pipeline? The Commonwealth Magazine has a quote from Bradley Campbell of Conservation Law Foundation stating, quote, with yet another state abandoning proposals for more natural gas pipeline capacity, these efforts to expand fossil fuel infrastructure in New England have hit a virtually unsurpassable roadblock, unquote, and noting that Spectra Energy, the promoters of this Access Northeast pipeline, they've lost a whopping 84% of the consumer base needed to finance this ill-conceived proposal, unquote, which goes to show you again that if they can't sort of you know stick it to the ratepayers, they basically have no product to sell.
I have my tiny little violin out and I'm playing a very soft song.
It makes your heart bleed, doesn't it?
Well, anyway, I mean, these guys, who knows what will come back, but from the point of view of opposing pipelines, this is good news that Connecticut has pulled out. I would urge everyone who has been in opposition to pipelines to not go back to watching TV every night, right? Mm-hmm. Once you realize that this is an important issue, there's lots of other things you can do in your town to support clean energy besides stopping the pipeline from coming through it. Mm-hmm. So anyway, so Connecticut pulls out, pipelines are all the more in trouble here in New England. And then the next piece of interesting news is a report again in Commonwealth Magazine, which I guess the guy's name is Bruce Mole, who does the most. Magazine's doing a great job. He points out that there is now a collaboration between Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island to basically share clean energy investments, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, yes. That was the report in Commonwealth Magazine noting that Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island have announced that they, quote, intend to negotiate 7 power purchase contracts with wind and solar developers selected through an unusual 3-state bidding process. It's an attempt by the 3 states to pool their buying power in the pursuit of clean energy needed to meet emissions goals. And all 3 states are expected to negotiate contracts with wind developers, Antrim Wind and Casadaga Wind, and solar developers, Ranger Solar and RES Americas. And the biggest contracts will be with Casadaga Wind and Range Solar. So it's a very impressive effort by Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island to sort of move forward on meeting, you know, emissions targets.
And I mean, it's collaborative in the sense that the distribution networks and the, you know, some of the sites, if you look at a map, so those of you not familiar with New England geography, look at a map. Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island are all contiguous, right? Basically mm-hmm. form the lower half of New England. And it makes sense that they should act in concert, right? Because mm-hmm. the boundaries are all political. They don't recognize where the best wind is and all that kind of stuff. So having mm-hmm. having this cross-border kind of collaboration is great. Of course, Rhode Island is also already has the Block Island Wind System, the first in the nation offshore wind facility, right?
It should have been us.
It should have been us, but it
should
was.
Have been us.
But Rhode Island is right close to us, and we're very proud of them. But there are 5 wind turbines off Block Island cranking away, and that's a great thing. So that's another piece of good news for the climate hawks out there that are paying attention to the state level things, which is, I mean, that's where a lot of the action is going to be. So mm-hmm. speaking of state-level things, the next piece of interesting news happened this week down in the state of New York. And again, to set things up, last week, well, there's the whole question of whether or not Exxon knew about global warming and did not tell its stockholders for the last 30 years that mm-hmm. Exxon's investments would be at risk from climate change, right? So several states' attorneys general, not the least of which being Maura Healey here in Massachusetts, and the guy in New York, Schneiderman, I think, have started investigations of Exxon. Last week we reported that Exxon was able to go to a judge in Texas and get basically try and stop Maura Healey's, Attorney General Healey's effort by having to have turn over all her emails, right? Classic disruption thing. But in the state of New York, Exxon met a different fate, did it not, DR? Yeah. Tell me, what happened in New York?
Yes, Exxon knew a loss, as it turns out, where as the New York State Supreme Court ruled that ExxonMobil and its auditor PricewaterhouseCoopers must comply with a subpoena issued by Eric Schneiderman's office trying to determine whether or not Exxon knowingly hid evidence that they knew all about the risks that climate change would pose to the economy and basically tried to obscure their own knowledge from the public. According to the Huffington Post, Schneiderman in November of 2015, almost coming up on a year from now on that, he subpoenaed Exxon following allegations that it lied to its investors about the risks of carbon emissions and climate change. A second subpoena issued in August 2016 seeks documents related to PricewaterhouseCoopers' work for the oil giant and the New York State Supreme Court rejected Exxon's effort to have this subpoena tossed, ruling that New York law, which does not recognize an accountant-client privilege, applies to Schneiderman's subpoena. Schneiderman said his office is looking forward to, quote, moving full steam ahead with our fraud investigation of Exxon, unquote. So after all that celebration, that premature celebration by Exxon after that federal judge in Texas basically allowed them to sort of, you know, get all up in Attorney General Maura Healey's business, now they're realizing that unless I assume they'll try to appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court, but if that doesn't go the way they want it to, it looks like they will have to comply, and And now, and to use that old Stevie Wonder song about skeletons in your closet, you know, it's going to get a little hot for them.
But, I mean, in the Maura Healey case, though, the thing against the Massachusetts Attorney General probably still stands, right? Because that was some judge down in Texas. But the New York case is ongoing, which is just – so, again, the whole question of the Exxon's fraudulent – well – alleged fraudulently defrauding the stockholders by not talking about climate change, that comes under the heading of the whole keep it in the ground aspect of the climate, the things we talk about, right? There's lots of stuff about keeping carbon in the ground, and one of those is to get the, basically, I guess you could say, to tarnish the brand of these big oil companies. Right, to make them less valuable stocks.
Yes.
And that's
And it also goes to show you, you know, even the most powerful fossil fuel organization in the world, at some point it has to answer to the law. You know, it can't override the law. You know, it can try to influence the law, but ultimately, you know the arc of justice, you know, the arc of history bends towards justice, that sort of thing.
Well, the speaking of the arc of history and justice and all, one other story that's popped up this week is I don't have a lot of background on it. I don't know how much you've got, but we with the same sort of keep it in the ground. Area of discussion, the folks protesting the pipeline out in Dakota, which has become much more of a topic for us over the last several weeks and months now. I mean, it seems as if the confrontational escalation out there just keeps going up, right? Mm-hmm. And that even like in real time as we speak, there are confrontations going on out there, right?
Yes, there have been a number of arrests this past week in the protests against the Dakota Access Pipeline. There have been a number of high-profile activists such as Jesse Jackson who've been going out to North Dakota to stand in solidarity with the Standing Rock Sioux tribe. And there have been a number of allegations of an escalation in brutality by law enforcement against the protesters. It's become a very, you know, tragic situation that, as we've noted before, has gone without any sort of real comprehensive or sustained coverage by the mainstream media, which seems to be curiously ignoring and disregarding this story. David Archambault, who's the head of the Standing Rock Sioux tribe, he was on NPR and faced what I thought were fairly hostile questions. He was on MSNBC with Lawrence O'Donnell, one of the few mainstream media figures to cover this story, and he noted that it appears that you know a lot of actually. It was not another one of the guests were basically making the point that, you know, the mainstream media seems to want to sort of sit back until something very bad happens, right? and then they'll decide to pay attention to this. But something bad is happening.
Right.
You know, the water and the ancestral lands are being affected. Mark Ruffalo was on CNN recently, in one of the rare times that CNN has covered this, and he noted that the land that Energy Transfer Partners, which is the parent company of the Dakota Access Pipeline, the land upon which they're building this, what they claim to be private land, is actually land owned by the Standing Rock Sioux tribe based on a treaty from, I believe, the 1850s or the 1860s. It's not the pipeline company's land.
Right.
It's the Standing Rock Sioux tribe's land. But for some reason, people are being arrested for trespassing on land that's theirs. How the hell can you trespass on your own land?
Well, I think the message, we are not reporting sort of breaking news here, but it is important for people to know that this, you know, as of now, right, as of end of October, this confrontation is ongoing and escalating, and it's good to know about it, because you're not going to hear about it, as you say, in the mainstream news. You probably need to seek out the updates on what's going on out there, and it's pretty horrible. It's pretty nasty.
It's interesting that one of the few I know it's not classified as mainstream media, but one of the few media entities that's covering this is Democracy Now. Mm-hmm. It's very, very interesting because if you think about it, that is exactly what the protesters are demanding, Democracy Now.
So DR, I guess the other actually, I like this. So the other story, I can use the word, the German word, I think it's Schadenfreude, which is the happiness you feel at someone else's sadness, which is really a nasty concept. But Schadenfreude for VW and its ongoing troubles that it created for itself. So, DR, tell me the story about what VW's been up to and why we ought to care.
Yes, the ongoing saga of what I like to call the VW bug, so to speak. It was reported in the LA Times that Volkswagen is now facing a $14.7 billion settlement of Volkswagen's emissions cheating case. It's the largest auto scandal settlement in United States history, according to the LA Times, and it paves the way for the company to make amends to nearly 475,000 United States owners of Volkswagens and Audis with 2-liter diesel engines. As was noted, when this story broke, they're basically put in software, as I said, the VW bug that essentially function as cheat devices that allowed these cars to sort of evade emission standards. And now they can't evade justice, can they?
But I guess the question is, will some of that money be funneled into some sort of green transportation technology?
There were some reports to that effect. Hopefully it will, because remember these cars were sort of marketed as more efficient, and it turns out it was a false efficiency, and now we're looking at some true efficiency potentially. As the LA Times notes, that it halted diesel sales in the United States after the scandal broke and its chief executive Martin Winterkorn resigned, but Volkswagen's reputation took an immediate hit. I don't think its reputation has come back yet, because this was just a really sleazy behavior on the part of Volkswagen. And again, it just goes to show you can delay avoiding justice, but ultimately you're going to face justice.
But I think that as part of this whole thing to regain its brand, since we've been talking about brands tonight, VW, I think, is working on cleaner technologies, electric mm-hmm. vehicles and stuff like that, right? Yes. And that's part of this deal.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there you go. I had a friend who had a VW, diesel VW, and he would say, "Oh yeah, I get 40 miles to the gallon on the road and it's clean." And it mm-hmm. turns out a few years later he was sorely disappointed by VWs. It's a sad thing.
Yes.
Anyway, Dia, what we'll do is we'll put up links to most of what we talked about on the blog. The blog is at massclimateaction.org/blog. You can find the links there. You can find a link to the blog and the podcast on our Facebook page, right, which is /massclimateaction. Please share us with your friends. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher or TuneIn Radio. You can find us on iTunes. You can find us on SoundCloud. So we're all over the place. You will close where we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak up, we must insist that the United States put a price on carbon. So, DR, thank you very much for being here.
Thanks.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us, and until next time, be green.
Very cool.